Hello and welcome to Clamp, the Creating, Living, and Making podcast. I'm your host, Grant Alexander, and joining me this week is Adam Mackey.
G'day.
And Morley Kurt.
Hello.
And we have a special guest, Dave from MakerPipe.
Hey, everybody. Nice to be here.
Hey, so why don't you take a second, tell us who you are, what you do, and all that fun jazz.
Sure. Yeah, my name is David Schlitter. I am co-owner of MakerPipe, which is we manufacture a connector system that allows people to build with just ordinary pipe, and specifically electrical conduit. So people can build just with a couple hand tools and make all kinds of crazy stuff. Usually not this. This is Sparky, something we made on a live stream recently. But usually it's more like utility stuff and solving unique problems with ordinary DIY material.
Yeah. Huh. Well, thanks for joining us, Dave. What have you been working on this week?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've been working on is trying to come up with better packaging for what we do to send out to our customers. So we ship out direct. E-commerce is almost all of our business. So we're, you know, shipping direct to customers. And Grant, you got some in the mail, right?
Mm-hmm.
At one point.
Yes, sir.
So I'm trying to improve the way we package our steel parts going out the door.
Yeah. What are you looking like? Are you trying to go like super pro, like blister packaging, or are you just trying to get out of Ziploc bags?
Yeah. We're anything better than Ziploc bags. Because we started off with Saran wrap, you know, like your kitchen Saran wrap, and our metal parts, I mean, they stack together pretty good. You can see they split in half and they stack into this metal kind of brick, right? And we would just start off by wrapping those in Saran wrap, and then we graduated to shrink wrap bags, you know, to kind of hold them all together. And we've been stuck at that point for the longest time. And, you know, I know it's not the best presentation to customers. I think we can do a lot better. So I've been on that project to try to figure out, okay, what's our next step to, you know, give a better impression to our customers and protect the stuff. And it's actually a pretty difficult, a lot harder than I thought it would be to come up with like packaging, right? You think packaging engineer, nobody's a package engineer, are they here?
Yeah. I'm not here.
Anybody. Okay.
I feel like we know something.
Maybe the listeners, but.
Well, I'm sorry in advance, but like, how hard could it be to come up with packaging, right? I didn't quite get it, but now that I'm in the thick of it, I'm trying to balance like shipping cost and material cost and, you know, how do you brand it and all these different factors, sizes and cardboard widths and thicknesses. So I definitely understand the woes of a packaging engineer now.
Yeah, I bought a few things in the past that clearly the packaging costs more than the product.
Yeah, what were they? Do you remember?
Well, one was a screen protector that came in the wooden box, and it cost me $3. I have no idea how they even afford the box for $3, but yeah, the screen protector.
Huh. You would think. Well, I mean, maybe the screen protector, I mean, a couple pennies maybe, something like that. So they spent all their money on the box.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, I know... At least you're doing direct to consumer, so you're not worried about what it looks like on the shelf, because I think that increases it to a whole nother level.
Definitely, right? Yeah.
Like, because now you're competing against everyone else and trying to show off what is your product, because people walking down the aisles don't know. If someone goes to the MakerPipe site, they'll see a nice picture of Ethan Carter, and they'll know exactly what it's all about. But if they... You know, if you were selling it at a big box store, then you'd have to put like a project or something on the packaging But luckily, you know, you don't have that worry as well. So I know when I did marketing, that was a big thing they talked about, packaging.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What's your history in marketing?
Like I took it in school.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Purely theoretical.
We did hands-on projects, but yeah, it was purely theoretical, I guess you could say. It's like saying at the end of your engineering degree, Morley, that you everything you had done up to that point was purely theoretical, and they shouldn't take anything you took. Yeah, okay, whatever.
So it sounds about right.
We don't have to worry about the outside. I mean, that's even better. The more plain you can get it, the better, right? Because it's going in the mail. You don't want to tip off to what's inside usually. But the inside experience, like the unboxing, you know, I've been thinking about, like, when that person gets that first package from us, MakerPipe, what are they going to, you know, think? And is the impression going to match up with everything that they've done up until that point? So
we can save it for the after show if you want, but I can tell you what I thought.
Yeah, no,
I can tell you now. It's whatever one you want.
What did you think? I'm curious to know.
Yeah, please be brutally honest.
What I felt is that I wondered if I got a like behind the scenes version because I was participating in the challenge. Hmm. But now that you describe it, it's apparently I got the what everyone else gets. You know, I thought I got like, you know, I didn't want to, you know, you're participating in the challenge, so you get the saran wrapped version instead of the, you know, packed in the normal way to save on shipping version, but apparently not. So that's what I thought. I didn't think I got the real one.
Right. Like so the customer paid money for these things.
Exactly. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be a very hard product to package, but
yeah. Even thinking about it now, I can't think of a good way that isn't cost prohibitive.
Like nuts and bolts. What's better than just a plastic bag, really? Like,
yeah.
Something that's heavy too, right? Like isn't that one of the reasons why it's hard to buy like screws and nails online?
Yeah.
Because they're so heavy that they aren't great for shipping.
Yeah. I think you're right that it's heavy and, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts thing would be an obvious way to go, right? Just put it in a bag and let it jostle around, which we could do for sure. But I know the connectors are going to get scratched up and all dinged up. So that's one of the reasons why we've kind of thought of going a little bit different direction and try to brainstorm some other options, you know?
And the nuts and bolts are powder coated as well, yeah?
Yeah, the nuts and bolts are powder coated. And we've got the silver finish, which can jostle around just fine, but the powder coated ones, they'll get dinged up if they're not kind of held tight.
Yeah.
So that's been one of the main challenges. The cool thing is that it's pretty small, right? They're smaller connectors and they fit into a relatively uniform shape once they nest together. So that's some of the positives in doing it.
And then you also got to think about the eco-friendliness of whatever packaging you go with, right? Like you don't want to go into a spot where people are getting a giant box of styrofoam that they're then throwing into the garbage for something that they
or tons of plastic.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's be honest, postal services aren't the most friendly when it comes to handling packages.
No. And we ask the most out of them because we'll send out like this brick of steel, basically, connectors that, and they have this unbelievable weight limit of 70 pounds. And I mean, that's a lot of weight, right? To put in a package. So, and quite often our packages are almost 70 pounds and that, they don't like us too much more than usual.
Well, sounds like you got quite the challenge going on there. And, I'm going to put it out there. If any of our listeners have a really great way, would you want them to reach out to you?
Oh yeah. I'd love to hear from the, you know, packaging engineers and, armchair experts for sure.
I thought someone in our Discord used to do that, but I think it's Jimmy DeResta I'm thinking of that used to do packaging.
Yes, well, Vincent, have him again, that'd be great.
Yeah. Vincent Ferrari does package design, but I don't think he does. He does the outside, not
he doesn't do the engineering side. Yeah.
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 Well,
yeah. But I mean, it. You know, to dig in a little bit, if we have time, you know, since
for sure.
Maker podcast, but I went as far as to go to the National Packaging Trade Show.
Oh, wow.
That they had just to collect ideas and try to figure things out, try to get some ideas on how to package this stuff. And that was a neat experience by itself because the automation at that show was unbelievable. If you want to automate packaging of anything, you go to that show. But I mean, we're on a DIY budget. We're a small company, right? So we have to figure out how to do it ourselves. But I did find one really cool technology, which was called skin packing. Have you guys ever seen this where it's like, it's on a piece of cardboard and then the parts are laid on the cardboard.
Oh yeah.
Like when you buy a gasket.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a piece of plastic's like sucked down, vacuum formed over the parts onto the piece of cardboard.
That's actually a really good way to do it.
Lots of car parts get sold that way.
Yeah.
If you buy like studs for your engine block, they get sold in that packaging.
Right. And it's a really cool process too, because it's akin to vacuum forming like plastic, right? Have you guys ever messed with that at all?
Yes.
And you get that molten sheet of plastic and then suck it down onto a form. Pretty much the exact same thing, only trying to do it with packaging. So right now, that's taking the lead. I found a vacuum former for $900 on eBay that was, you know, 400 miles away. So we bought that. I've been rehabbing it, like adding new, you know, doodads to make it work, and we're giving that a try. So that's when I say, well, I've been working on packaging. It's actually been rehabbing that skin packaging machine to give it a try.
Well, it sounds like you got a solution then.
We'll see. I don't know.
We'll see. All right. Well, I guess we'll go on to me. I was this week has just been mainly baby duty. Haven't done too much. It's like just trying to figure out the routine, because a new baby introduces a new routine into my life, and just trying to figure out when, like, there's a lot of these times where I could go and work out in the garage for an hour, but I don't know, because we haven't figured out the routine yet. I don't know if that's a good hour to go out or not. Right. So that's what I've been working on this week. Not much. How about you, Morley?
You caught me jostling with cords because my phone is about to die and I'm trying to type up the show notes. It's been a good week. I actually this morning finished up this travel wallet, which I've been working on. And this was the idea behind this was I got that hand cranked Chinese cobbler sewing machine. It has like 20 word title because it's the most SEO optimized product on Amazon. But yeah, I don't know. I was kind of just like playing with materials in my workshop and just thinking about like different things I could make. And settled on doing this also because we've just been talking about like travel and some trips we want to take recently. It was a really cool project, like pretty challenging to do like full on bag work, something I don't do very often. But it was a really good way to get a lot of reps in on this machine. And it's definitely tricky. Like I actually didn't really realize this until I was editing the video about it today. How much only being able to control the material with one hand is a challenge. Sewing something simple, it wouldn't be a challenge, but a lot of times when I was making this, I was sewing together like five, well, not a lot of times, but sometimes I was sewing together like four or five layers of material, and trying to keep all that aligned whilst cranking is a bit tricky. But I'm like super happy with how it came out. It's not like the cleanest thing in the world, but it has a cool kind of like outdoorsy travel aesthetic, which I really like.
I when you mentioned the five layers all jostling around, that's exactly what I was thinking about last week when we talked about it, about gluing it together.
Mm.
And why I mentioned getting non-wax canvas and then waxing it after, because I was thinking about trying to glue together five different things, or trying to sew five things at a time. But you did it, so.
Well, like, honestly, like, I've done that a lot with contact cement, and it's honestly not a very nice experience, because it's very smelly. It leaves a residue. And when you're doing, so this is, I sewed this inside out and then turned it back. And when you're doing that, you have to be super careful if you do use contact cement with how you apply it, because if you apply it too deeply, like too, if you have a too wide of a strip, that'll show up when you turn it inside out and it'll look bad. So I was kind of, you know,
can't you use ball clips to hold it together?
Yeah, you can. And I did in some parts. I don't have the best clips for it. So I did pin some areas, but some of it I was just doing freehand.
So I've used the water-based contact cement. And one, I don't know. I'm not a good judge of smell because I don't have a sense of smell. But I can't smell it. And it's water wash up. So I really like that. So I can use like a foam brush to put it on, and it makes it so that you can put it on really easy. And it's not like barge where it like looks like snot. Yeah. It's more like it looks like white glue.
Yeah. I used some of that, when I was in Montreal, and it's the sort of thing where it's just like, I ran out of the amount that I had. So I just stopped using it. And in my mind, it's like the non-water-based is better, and it does work better, but you're right, for something like this, the water-based, not so toxic version would probably be better. But it's also like, you know, I just wanted to get it done and keep making progress. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to make do with what I have.
Yeah. Turned out nice.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's a cool video because the machine is so much fun to watch work, because it's, you see all the gizmosity right on the outside. So I think it's going to make a really cool video. But, you know, speaking of packaging, this is actually a good kind of tangent to insert. Grant, you have one of these sewing machines, but you didn't get it from China, right? Like, you got it from someone else?
Yeah, no, I got it from, a neighbor who was giving it away.
Okay, so the packaging for this thing, when it comes from China, is appalling. So, it's in a cardboard box.
And, no way.
Yeah, so that's the first step, right? Such a twist and turn. And you open the cardboard box, and it's that classic styrofoam that's made of a bunch of tiny little balls that are all kind of like fused together.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just the most crumbly version of that styrofoam. So you pull it out of the box, and all these little styrofoam beads immediately go everywhere. And it was like the most hyper statically charged styrofoam I've ever used before. Like, I took it out, and they just flew. They literally, like, I saw them go like to all four corners of the room. Instantly, they just were attracted to anything that had a static charge on it. And then to top it off, so you take the machine out, and then also obviously all those little styrofoam balls are in every little crevice of the machine, which is absolutely covered in grease. So it's this mixture of like styrofoam, greasy styrofoam everywhere. And I mean, you know, it keeps it from rusting, so I'm sure they can sit in boxes for years and it's good, but it's like you can see why that thing's $130 and where they're cutting the corners.
Totally.
Not the impression that you wanted, right?
No, I was expecting something a little rough around the edges. Honestly, it has surpassed my expectations. Like, I was really expecting to have to like sand down a lot of casting marks, because that's what a lot of people said on Amazon. But mine was like pretty well finished. The only real things I did was like put some thread locker on a bolt and oiled it, and then sanded down the teeth on the walking fit, because they're really sharp. But yeah, it's been a really cool machine to be playing around with.
Oh, neat. So it's a hand-cranked walking foot sewing machine, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, neat. Yeah. It's a cool thing for sure.
I think Ethan has one as well, and he's never used it either. So funny that Ethan got it, never used it. I got one, never used it. You got one, you were like using it while the styrofoam balls were still flying about the room.
Yeah, you got to use it to, you know, expel the styrofoam balls by centrifugal force. That's how you're going to get them out. Yeah, no, it's just a little barrier, you know, like you see it and it's a little, it's like in a few pieces, but as soon as you start using it, you're kind of off to the races.
Totally. I'm excited to use mine one day.
One day.
Well, what about you, Adam? What have you been working on?
I have done pretty much nothing. I mean, it's been 4 days since we last talked, so hasn't been that much time, but I had the weekend, I've actually had the last 4 days off and I've done nothing.
Have you been hitting the gym?
Yeah, I've been going to the gym.
Okay.
Went to gym this morning. I did a class at 5 a.m. And then after this, I'm going to do two more classes.
There you go.
How are you feeling about your challenge? You're feeling confident still?
No, not really.
Oh.
No, I don't know. I'm not too bad. I mean, like, I'm still, like, I'm working hard and everything, but I've cheated meals a few times and stuff. But, you know, it happens. Like, it's bad habits I got to get rid of again.
Yeah.
I just want to get back to January last year.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
Well, I thought we should kickstart this conversation in a different direction and talk about crowdfunding, because we have someone here who was successful at a Kickstarter after maybe being less successful. But I wanted to talk to Dave a little bit about crowdfunding and how you, why you picked Kickstarter, what happened, and we'll start kind of at that genesis moment way back in the, when you had the, you know, $100,000 goal to kickstart your project.
Yeah. You know, I think being a maker first and foremost, that, like, you know, you're always making things and solving problems, but like taking it and making a business out of it or just selling that thing is a lot different. And, I think that was like the challenge, you know, that I had, my wife and I had, cause it's a business between both of us, but, is like, okay, have this cool thing that I know I can make, but how the heck am I going to get people to be interested in it? Right. Are they going to want to buy it? Are they going to want to use it? All that stuff. So, this was back probably like 5 years ago that, no, 6 years ago, actually, that we ran, our first Kickstarter. And like you mentioned, we've done two Kickstarters. First one was a total flop, and then the second one got some legs and was successful, but it just seemed like, and maybe Kickstarter had some more hype to it than it did now. I mean, I was seeing all these projects, like, you know, the famous one, like the coolest cooler, and like all these 3D printers that were getting millions of dollars. The Pebble watch, I remember, like, these are, do you guys remember any of those? Any of those ring a bell?
The coolest cooler is the only Kickstarter I have almost kickstarted. I haven't kickstarted a single one, but that was the only one. When it came out, I just went like, I need this, and I don't need it, and it's horrible. And it's like, now that I've thought about it, like 5 years later, it was, the video sold me on something I didn't need.
The only Kickstarter I have kickstarted was Super Troopers 2.
Oh yeah, that was
good. To be in.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was so like such a sexy thing to run a Kickstarter that it was almost like, okay, whatever, I'm gonna try and do this and see if I can even make it happen, right? So it was kind of a little bit of a goal, just because it was a cool thing and it kind of fit the direction of our project. So my wife and I set out to do a Kickstarter. You need a video, you need all this other stuff, but, you know, an idea and everything, but like mainly you need a video, right? The coolest cooler, the video is what makes or breaks the Kickstarter.
Right.
So, not knowing a thing about how to make a video, we blindly just found a production company and, put a little bit of money into the video. Right. And, I still remember going and launching, you know, we have this video and we're going to launch the Kickstarter. And like, all we have is this video and the Kickstarter. Like, we were registering the Instagram name like that night. We were trying to, we were on Squarespace trying to get a website and like just, you know, copy and pasting information from the Kickstarter to the website. While we were launching the Kickstarter, the day it was going live. And
so I got a question. Did you launch it the day all that stuff because you were just so excited to do a Kickstarter? Is that all, like, you were just that excited? You just wanted to have it happen.
I think so. We were so laser focused on that Kickstarter, that goal, that all the other stuff that is really important that we find out later that you do, we didn't even pay any attention to it. We were just laser focused on that.
Fair.
So to make a Kickstarter, you don't need an initial product, right? You just need the idea. So how do you perceive that product if you don't have a physical product? Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, we had, I mean, we had thought it through, right? And we had some prototypes. I think, yeah. You know, if I look at like my skill set, it's definitely on the product side. I've worked in manufacturing. I had a career in manufacturing for like 10 years doing everything from industrial engineering, lean manufacturing. And, you know, it, that was like my skill set was the product side.
Right.
As this whole thing is unfold, not only the Kickstarter, but the business after the Kickstarter, the marketing side is the new skill set, right, that I yeah. had to develop. And pretty obvious because, Adam, I had kind of the thoughts of how the product would be and even how we'd manufacture it if we got funded. But marketing and that side of it totally escaped me, right? Because we were starting just with this video and a Kickstarter the yeah. day it launched. So here we are. We're launching our first Kickstarter. We've got lofty goals. All the tooling costs about $100K to do the tooling for our parts. They're metal stamped, so we got quotes for that. So our goal was $100K. Huge goal. And
but everyone's getting millions, so
right.
Everyone's surpassing their goals, so why not you?
Yeah, I can't deny that thought crossed my mind, right? Like, this is our time. We've thought this a little bit through. We're going to give it a shot. But, you know, and we went to a couple maker fairs and we did some promotion, right? But we were just getting started. And we ended up, at the end of the first one, reaching $10,000. Okay. In backing, which is amazing, actually, yeah. right?
Yeah. But just, that's a crazy amount of money of people who went, I just like your idea. And I like it. Not only do I like it, I like it enough to put money down on a goal that I don't think is reachable even. Like, because if they put it down at when it's at a dollar, they have no clue, right?
Yeah. Right.
If you put it down when it's at 99,000 out of 100, you're like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get the thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. I mean, those people have always have a special place in my heart that backed us on that first one. Cause it's a big ask. I mean, Kickstarter is a huge ask to put your money up front. You don't know what's going to happen. You right. could be wasting your time. If the Kickstarter doesn't reach its goal, then everybody gets their money back and it's, you know, waste of your time. But so we left that Kickstarter kind of with our, you know, our project, you know, dead in the water, right? We had a lot of people that said, hey, this is cool enough to like pre-order it and back you guys, but not enough to put our hopes and dreams and our project into motion. And, you know, we were kind of encouraged by that $10,000 backers, which was really awesome. And we're like, gosh, we got to figure out how we can make this possible, right? And we learned a few critical things. One, which was what we're talking about, is our goal was way too high, right? If people don't have that confidence that you're actually going to make it and it's going to be a real thing, you know, they're sitting on the fences. They're not going to get in the game at all. So we learned that.
And it's way easier to back something that's met its goal. Way easier. That's why when things hit their goal, they usually surpass it like very quickly right after, because everyone realizes I'm putting money to something. Yeah. I'm not, it's not even a gamble because you get your money back. But for some reason you sit on the fence going, well, I don't want my money tied up. And I can understand that. If you're on the fence about what you can and cannot afford, you're not putting your money towards to sit there and not do anything until the end of the Kickstarter campaign.
So
they're never that long, so I don't know why people worry that much.
What makes it still be a campaign? Because theoretically, if I go on now and like Kickstart will support you or whatever, I'm essentially just buying the product, no?
You've got a limited time window. Like, you run a campaign for 30 days, yeah, and it has limited time. So if you don't get that backing, that support in that time window, then curtain closes and it's done. So
so you can no longer buy through the Kickstarter. You have to go through your website.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Right. If you even have a website. We didn't even have a way to sell it.
Yeah. I mean, specifically you, though. Because yours is finished, right? So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then we were kind of licking our wounds, thinking, hey, this is awesome that we got this much interest. We got to figure out how to make it happen. And that's kind of even more when my maker kind of mindset kicked in, my DIY kind of mindset kicked in. Because we're like, the whole reason for the big goal was the production tooling that these big stamping houses were trying to charge us. So I'm like, okay, how hard could it be? Like, how can I make this happen with less money, right? Which
I feel like that's your motto, is how hard could it be? And then I think it's a lesson on how hard it actually is.
Yeah, it turns out very hard throughout this whole time. But and I think, like, you know, a lot of people, that's why one reason they DIY, right? Not always. I mean, a lot of times it's for other things, but sometimes it is to just find the most economical way to do things.
Totally. Yeah. For sure. Like, I definitely, how hard could it be? I've done lots of how hard could it be, and then live with a piece of garbage kitchen floor for 8 years now that I needed to redo a month after I was done, because how hard could tiling be? Apparently, very hard.
Especially on a floor.
Yeah, and it was 1,400 square feet of tile. Yeah. So, that was fun.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to be kind of an optimist, right, to do any of the things that you guys do. True. So I think that's a big part of it. But I did some research, hooked up with, like, I went to YouTube, you know, figured out how it was going to be, saw NYC CNC. Have you guys ever seen that channel before?
No.
John Saunders. Yeah.
It teaches, he was basically a guy in his basement in New York City doing CNC machining, you know, with a hobby machine, and like putting it on YouTube. And he's had an awesome channel for a very long time. But he taught me a bunch of stuff, and I went out and tried to find the cheapest, and I mean the absolute cheapest CNC that would cut, you know, tool steel to make a die. And what I arrived at was a Grizzly drill mill, you know, this cheap Chinese drill press with an X and Y table, and then a CNC stepper motors and system attached to it. Right. So it's a total homegrown solution. Get that thing and put it together. And then, I mean, it would it would cut off, the power would just cut off unexplainably in the middle of programs. You know, here I am trying to machine tool steel and get this die made, and we're cutting off at like hour two of a 12-hour cutting program. Oh, it was just insanity trying to get this thing done. But, you know, I kept, you know, it'd cut off, I'd rehome and figure it out and keep cutting. And, you know, we figured out how to do it. We figured out how to make metal stamping dies with just cheap tools we cobbled together. And then we were like, okay, let's give it another shot. Let's take that learning that we got from the first one and then lower the goal way down, you know, use all the people that had backed us, right? Keep in touch with them, create that community and engage with them and grow that community. And then let's start another one. So that's what we did. We went to all the maker fairs we could and tried to build up that list and then set off to start that next Kickstarter.
Did you ever consider not doing a second Kickstarter?
Like
just to go, hey, let's do it. Let's just launch. Let's put all of our money. Let's refinance the house. Let's do it.
It wasn't an option. I mean, financially, it wasn't an option, you know? I mean, the MakerPipe has been bootstrapped from the very, very beginning. But for like a month, we considered not doing the second Kickstarter, right? And just kind of like, okay, let's keep going with our day jobs, like, right? Like think of something else or just keep going with life. But then it just eats at you. At least it did us. And that's when we decided to kind of go down this second path.
You know, something I find interesting is that, like, if you didn't do a Kickstarter at all to begin with, and you were trying to get to that goal of, like, the production and stuff, and it failed the way that it did, or didn't fail, but went the way that it did, I wonder if you would have still kept pursuing the idea, or if Kickstarter wasn't an option. Do you know what I mean? Like if it failed the first time, you might have been like, you know what, this is just not going to work. We just can't make this work. Whereas Kickstarter can help with that because it helps get the funds in that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Like it to, I think I can summarize that question a little different way. What would you do if something like crowdfunding didn't exist? Because you come up with an idea that you thought was a marketable product, and if Kickstarter didn't exist, what would you have done?
Yeah, I think it would have been out of reach. I think the whole kind of business would have been out of reach, quite honestly. You know, because it seemed like such an investment and such a leap to get there that if it wasn't for having the access to Kickstarter's community and like some people saying, yeah, that's cool, I'll pre-order it, that gave us the confidence to move forward. So it was really important.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question, Adam?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Cool.
As the Australians would say. So, okay. So what were your biggest lessons from, we'll go Kickstarter 1 and Kickstarter 2 overall, if you were to somehow do Kickstarter 3, but it's on the original, like your second one failed or so whatever, or you're telling someone new, hey, these are the things I've learned the most and I would do differently.
Yeah. So,
or I would recommend you do, because you don't have to do it differently if you never did it in the first place.
Yeah. We've thought of doing another one, but it didn't seem authentic to what Kickstarter we perceive it being all about. Like some brands just put up their new products there, right? And that's, we actually needed that boost from Kickstarter. But one of the big lessons learned, probably the number one, and you guys know this because you all have communities and social media, is to have a community before you start. Have some interest before you go and launch your Kickstarter. right? Like the first video that you guys had put out, everybody, you guys all have channels and everything like that. You know, your first video just goes into the void.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is going to be awesome. Right. And sometimes they still do, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, we just put a Kickstarter out into the void and expected something to happen. And that's just not how it works. So our biggest...
It sounds like you got 10,000 people or $10,000 worth of people who thought that worked. If I could get 10,000 views on a video that I just threw out into the void, I'd be pretty darn happy. I'm going to put that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It not to say nothing happened, right? Because something did happen. We did a little bit of that. Like we were pounding the pavement. We went to some Maker Faires and stuff and we got lucky a little bit, but it just wasn't the momentum that we needed, right? Because you compare that and contrast that to the second one, and we had a mailing list, like an email list, which was just, you know, critical to doing. So every event we went to and we were telling people about it, plus the backers for the first one, they went on an email list, right? Which is such a basic concept, but we were just learning this stuff for the first time. And they backed us early on. Our goal was way lower, and we got funded within hours instead of, you know, not being at all. And when that happened, it was this algorithm kind of, you know, wave. You got to ride the wave of the Kickstarter algorithm because they saw the interest and it got a lot more exposure for the project. You know, not that
The velocity of it.
Right. The velocity of it. And, you know, I hear that's what happens with YouTube videos. I don't know.
I was about to say, Kickstarter sounds a lot like YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a big learning, was to generate that interest ahead of time. And then the goal was another one. I mean, if anyone is thinking about doing a Kickstarter, make the goal as low and attainable as possible. Because that's what people want to see. Like you were saying before, Grant, it's like nobody wants to waste their time with something that's going to go nowhere.
Right.
Yeah, it makes sense. Why would I put a dollar into something that a million people then have to put a dollar into?
Yeah, you might save it and like maybe keep tabs on it if you're lucky. If you can even remember to do that, like how often can you actually remember to do that stuff? But yeah, keep the goal as low as possible. That was a big change because it was, you know, it was 100K the first one, just 10K the second one, which was for our tooling costs and about what we backed with the first Kickstarter. And then we got... It ended up being almost $100,000 in backers after. So it was totally reversed. They just flip-flopped. It was amazing.
That's so funny. So did you end up going with the homemade CNC version, or did you end up going with a production tool because you got the $100,000?
Once we learned how to do it, I wouldn't... then like. I'm going to do
it. Just justify the price then. Yeah.
Yeah. Like fair. You guys are crazy. You're going to charge me $20,000 for this one die and I'm going to make it myself. Are you crazy? Right.
Right.
Like, now I know how to do it. Now granted we ditched that grizzly, mill, you know, we sold that thing to the next poor guy that had to deal with it. But, we got like, you guys seen a Tormach Siemens CNC?
Yeah, like the fully enclosed ones.
Yeah, the fully enclosed. Like they're a garage built, kind of made for the garage. We got something similar to that. It was right on level with that, which is, we're still making our dies on that thing today. So it's been a good investment.
I don't know if this is proprietary knowledge, but I'm curious. When you were doing the garage built Grizzly CNC to make your dies, How were you stamping them? Were you using like a bottle jack press or something? Was it similarly cobbled together?
Yeah. No, it was this. Yeah. It was the cheapest Harbor Freight press that we could find, you know, just to squish two dies together with some metal in the middle.
Wow.
Wow.
That must have been. So when you, I'm curious though, like, so the Kickstarter took off and then you had to fulfill orders. So were you in any way under pressure to produce with that kit, or did you quickly just pivot to the Tormach and the more kind of efficient production method when you're actually trying to ship out to customers?
Yeah. To call it efficient at that point would be, you know, a gross overstatement. I joke a lot that we were liking making artisan steel connectors, right? Like handmade one by one. But we had a ton to make. So like the joy of a Kickstarter kicking and then the fear of, oh crap, now we've got to actually do it is a real thing. So that
you pretty much just threw yourself under the bus.
Yeah. And we had, you know, had day jobs and all that, but we bought a better CNC. We bought that Tormach one and upgraded our production process a bit. But still, it's like you're still very much in that DIY mode. In fact, I feel like we've been in that mode for the good part of, you know, the time since the Kickstarter.
To sidetrack a little bit, I'm just wondering about like production, how that works. So the Tormach makes a positive and negative die, right? And then so you sandwich like between it. How long does a die make? Because I would assume once you make a die, that's it. You don't need to make another one.
That's true. They're hardened steel. So the process is you use tool steel, which is already pretty hard, and then you'll machine it and then heat treat it, and it becomes, you know, really hard, like the hardness of a cutting bit or something like that. So we have kept some of those original dies, but are learning on how to make these things efficiently and with better quality has evolved, right? So that's one of the main drivers in making new dies.
Wow. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm coming back to something you mentioned earlier, which is the spirit of Kickstarter. And so you were saying like investing in the business as it currently operates didn't really seem to be the spirit of Kickstarter, which is a really interesting point because it does seem to be this platform that caters to like a very specific type of investment. It's like a new novel product that is for a new company. I guess most people wouldn't expect to see existing companies investing in Kickstarter, although it could be a huge variety of things. But I guess it has its own culture, just like any other internet platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I discounted how much people were, they cared about the actual people behind the project. You know, my initial thought was all about the thing, and people would vote with their dollar on what thing they thought should exist. And that's certainly part of the equation, right? But a lot of it, too, we found out is they wanted to believe in the, you know, the project creators as well, to have it become a reality and then have the people realize their dreams, whoever was running this project, which is really cool.
Have you ever watched Shark Tank?
Yeah, absolutely.
But have you watched Dragon's Den?
No.
Which was on before Shark Tank in Canada.
Oh, no way. No.
Yeah, and it's the same show, but they just, in America, they changed it to Shark Tank for whatever reason. In the Canadian version, it's super product focused. In Shark Tank, they like have these like film crews visit their houses and do backstory and make it all dramatic. That's why I don't like Shark Tank, because I'm more like you. Like, it's my dollar goes towards the product. Is the product good? No, I don't care. I don't care if you've got, you know, twins at home and you're trying to do this out of your garage. I don't, none of that matters to me. Is it a cool project or not? It's all that that I care about. But I think it's true that there are a lot of people, because Shark Tank's way bigger than Dragon's Den. That's probably like population wise, you know, Canada versus America. But it's got to be something to be with why they switched up the format. Is there has to be something with the people matter more, or they matter a lot. And every big like DIY person who ends up getting on a show, it starts off like Mike Holmes, Holmes on Holmes. I don't know if you've seen him. His original, like the first Holmes on Holmes shows were like, you're learning, almost learning how to do stuff. And the end, it's like, ah, this is all shit, right? It's all like people and, oh, they lost their house and, oh, somebody screwed them over. And it's like, where did all the like construction go? It turned into like a sob story about these people and had nothing to do with it. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess there's a reason for that. I don't like it, but I'm not trying to get myself to buy stuff, I guess. If anyone's out there trying to get a Kickstarter from me, they know what to do, but I'm not the average person.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the meeting of at least those two elements, right? The personality and the story with the product. And when those come together, it becomes more compelling, I guess. And, you know, and that's why I think brands that just use Kickstarter as a launch platform for their newest product, right, after they're already solid, they lose part of that story. They lose part of that compelling part of the Kickstarter, what I think of Kickstarter as. But I don't know. I think it's also changed a bit, Kickstarter, over the years since we've run it. What's your guys' impression of kind of Kickstarter in today's atmosphere?
I don't really know anything about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't see anything about Kickstarter anymore.
Yeah.
Like, other than, I think Jacko, whatever, did a Kickstarter to get his little pen. And then it was, like, because he did the Maker Knife, and then he did the little screwdrivers. And I watched the videos for them, and he has really high production value videos.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I know about Kickstarter these days. And it feels like GoFundMe, which was like the Kickstarter competitor, is now just American healthcare. Hmm. That's it.
I was about to say, GoFundMe isn't a Kickstarter, is it? I thought it was just to give me money because my house burnt down.
Yeah, well, GoFundMe had some Kickstarter, originally had some idea of
giving something back.
I have an idea, right? Yeah. It wasn't all charity. And right. Now it's just pretty much just, yeah, my house burnt down or I have cancer or I lost my job, whatever.
I feel like Kickstarter used to be a lot more products. And I feel like recently I've seen it transition to more like video games and other intangible creative works. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it's just the sense that I've gotten. Like, similar to these guys, like, I haven't spent a lot of time on it, but this conversation definitely makes me want to browse it more often because I'm also getting more into product development, and I feel like it could be some really good research and inspiration to see, like, what the current state of things is.
I'm totally with you with I'm like, against the ethical. Like, I'm just going to kickstart my new idea, my new product line. Like, you recently launched the 1-inch conduit line. And I assume you guys were considering, should we do another Kickstarter to see if we should do this, right?
Yep, exactly.
And I'm with you. I don't think it's either that product line works with your company or it kind of doesn't. But that's because it's the same thing. You're not going in a completely different direction. You didn't have a new idea. You have like a variation on your idea.
Yeah, right. And we have a business at this point, right? We're able to have a business that has employees and pays us and stuff.
Right, but if you came up with something that was like a new tool, had nothing to do, like, you're still a maker, you still have a business, but it has nothing to do with pipes and it has nothing to do with connectors. I could see a Kickstarter from you, but it wouldn't be a Kickstarter from MakerPipe. Like, then I don't, like, you've been successful before, so you know how to do it, but it's not, and even then there's people who have a success and then have a failure, right? But it wouldn't be from MakerPipe. It would be from, you know, you or your wife or whatever.
And we were scared of that. We were scared of a failure with Kickstarter, right? Say we did this Kickstarter a few years later and then it flopped. I mean, that would be, I am proud of that we had a successful Kickstarter 5 years ago and then we try it again and it doesn't kick. We're kind of afraid of that, you know?
Well, yeah, that's like a bad PR move right there.
Well, I mean, just for your, you know, what you, how you feel about as a person, it would take a hit on you. I think it definitely would be.
It's probably, probably a really dumb question, but like, say the first one, that didn't work out. Do those, all those people who funded you get their money back?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, so there is a, there is sort of like a, if this doesn't make it, I will get my money back. Like, it's not a complete gamble.
Up until that point of it meeting its reward.
But if it meets its reward, then you're getting what you've paid for anyway, yeah?
That's the hope. That's the promise. That's a big problem with Kickstarter.
I mean, someone could just take the money and run.
Yeah, there's been tons of people that have done that.
Yeah,
I mean, we delivered on our promise. I'm really proud of that, right? It took a while. It took longer. But a lot of people just, I don't know, did anyone get the coolest coolers? Did that ever happen?
I couldn't find that. And the other one I was thinking about, there was like this jet ski / four-wheeler thing.
I've seen that.
Yeah. And that was another one where I went, like, if I was rich, you know, I would definitely have one of those. But I can't. I remember seeing the Kickstarter. I can't see it as a product. So,
yeah, there were some lofty ones for sure.
Yeah.
So, Dave, I'm curious. Like, having this Kickstarter behind you by a few years, and now looking towards other lines, where do you feel in the story now of MakerPipe? Do you feel like you guys are in like a comfortable position, or are you still kind of scrambling, bootstrapping? How does it feel now compared to the launch of that Kickstarter?
It feels a little bit more secure. You know, I feel like accomplished in the progress that we've made since then, because we have come a long way. But at the same time, we're still struggling every day. That's one of the things that I've realized in this time is that, you know, as long if you keep pushing forward, if you're trying to keep move towards a goal, the struggle is similar. As long as you're there to put that energy in, it's amazing, really. You think it's going to get easy, but
if it got easy, then you'd get bored.
How do you fund $14 million and not provide the product?
Yeah,
I was just looking at the coolest cooler. What?
Did they not deliver on that?
It says that they're going out of business.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why Kickstarter has and other crowdfunding platforms have gotten a bad rap, and why people are hesitant to go in on something.
Right.
It's changed for sure.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, it's similar to, you know, the people who are skeptical of like cryptocurrency. It's like any unregulated new business is gonna have the drawbacks that come with it being unregulated and new, in that you're gonna have some people that don't do what they say they're gonna do because no one's really watching out.
Yeah. Well, on that positive note, let's go into client mandations.
So, like I've been telling you guys, I was a product guy trying to learn marketing, right? and the podcasts and YouTube have taught me everything that I have learned about marketing. So one podcast that stands out among all the ones that I listen to. Are you guys familiar with Shopify?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're from Ottawa, where I live.
Oh, that's awesome.
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
It's like, you know, e-commerce platform that makes it so easy to sell your business. And we use Shopify for MakerPipe website, right. But there's this podcast called the Unofficial Shopify Podcast with a great group of guys that just talk marketing and e-commerce. And that's, I've learned so much from that podcast. So definitely check that one out. The Unofficial Shopify Podcast.
Cool. Yeah. When I used to go into the office, my lunchroom, I could see the Shopify building.
Oh, wow. Nice. But
it's been 2 years since I've done that. So somehow I don't go outside of my house anymore. I don't know why, but yeah.
Introvert.
Introvert. That's why. Yeah. Nothing external affecting my ability to leave the house.
It's not like you have a new baby or anything.
Wow. That's only recent. And I've honestly, getting the baby left the house a lot more than I had in the last 18 months. Like, Morley, what about you?
I picked up a Wacom drawing tablet this week. Mm-hmm. It was about like $80 new, and I found it for $50 on Facebook Marketplace. And for $50, I feel like anyone who does any photo editing should just get one because it's great, and I'm really excited to like dive into it more. The impetus for getting for wanting to get one of these was anytime I had drawn masks, so like tracing something in a photo editing software is painful, like literally painful with a mouse. Like you'll get carpal tunnel just doing it.
I do it pixel by pixel.
Yeah. So I was like, I need to stop doing this. So that's what I, a few months ago, was thinking about getting one. And then what kind of pushed me over the edge was I want to like revamp my branding and do some kind of like handwritten stuff. And so drawing tablet is a pretty solid way to do that. So I've been kind of playing around with it the past couple of days and just scratching the surface. I want to also see if I can integrate it into my video editing workflow. I'm so quick with the keyboard and mouse as is that like, I know I'll have to like force myself to try to do it, but I'm just curious to see how like how it would change my workflow. But it's really exciting, like just to add a new kind of dimension to something that I spend a lot of time doing, and maybe do it in a much more comfortable way.
It's really funny because I have a white Wacom, whatever Wacom. However you say it. I got one of them. Got it. Well, Abby got it. You know. For Christmas last year, so 11 months ago, and never tried to use it, even though I've done a bunch of photo editing and it totally would have come in handy. And
can you put paint on it?
Just like a thing. Can you use it with paint? MS Paint?
If you can't use it with MS Paint, Grant's out.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the applications.
Oh, sweet. I'll have to try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam?
Cool. Okay. My recommendation this week is a show on YouTube called Pimped Out, and it is West Coast Customs. They have their own YouTube channel, and they've essentially taken Pimp My Ride and made their own version on YouTube. It's like 15-minute videos. They take they get customers come in to service their car, and they just randomly pimp it out and give it back to them. I mean, it's kind of cool.
The people aren't expecting it. Like they just want a normal oil change.
So the people get called up. They pick them like they're like loyal customers. They call them up and say, "Hey, there's a recall on something on the car," and then they get them to come in and drop the car in for like 4 days while the recall gets fixed. And then when they come pick up the car, they're like, "Oh, by the way, there was no recall, and here's your pimped out car." But it's not like over the top. It's like they do like paint wheels and a couple of like little things. It's not like a big like Pimp My Ride thing.
They're not putting TVs and refrigerators in the back.
No.
You're not putting like an aquarium in the back seat of a car in the middle of the desert for some
reason. It's more just like, just make the car nice again.
Okay.
The first couple of episodes are good, and then it's sort of like, I don't know, it seems like the more episodes they put out, the less they do to the cars. So yeah, right. the first few are good, but then it sort of gets a bit crap and boring.
Is Exhibit the rapper in that too?
No.
If he's not in it, I'm not watching.
Yeah.
They should get him in for an episode. That'd be heaps good.
Yeah. Call it what you want to call it. I'm a fucking alcoholic. It's one of my favorite songs.
So Ryan listens to the podcast, so you can take that idea.
So I'm going to suggest people check out This Old Tony. Austin from High Caliber Craftsman just kept talking about him and saying go check out one of his videos. And I found one of the videos that wasn't an hour long and watched it. It was the tap thread boring tool using like a regular old tap to make taps in really large bolts. And I don't have a mill. I don't have any of the tools he used in it other than a tap. But I could definitely see how it could be used. And I went, that's cool. And it was well explained. And I don't know, it seemed like a good video.
That was the first video you've ever seen of his?
Yes.
All right. No. I have two suggestions. At least one, if I can remember the other. I haven't watched any of his videos in a while, but I really enjoyed some of the ones that I've seen. One of them is he makes a espresso machine from scratch. Okay. Not exactly an espresso machine, technically a mocha pot, so like a stovetop espresso maker, which is super cool. And I can't remember the others, but his videos are really cool. And very, very well made.
One day I will check out some more for sure, because YouTube has been trying to get me to watch him for years. And I've just never done it. I don't know.
He's like a much better AVE.
I don't like AVE, so.
There you go. You'll like him.
All right. Well, I want to say thank you to our Patreon supporters, especially the F clamp level, Brent Jarvis from Clean Cut Woodworking. Everyone who would like to join in on the Patreon, you can come and reach us over at patreon.com/clamp. If you go there and you support at any level, you will be getting access to the pre-show and the after show, where we sometimes talk about secret stuff, and we're going to make sure that secret stuff about Maker Pipe is talked about this time. So you really have to, even if it's my secret about it. But and you also get a one-off keychain made by Morley Kurt. If you can't support us there, I totally understand that. You can support us by listening, sharing, and writing a review. And as you all know, if we have a review, we usually do it, and Morley does a nice accent of your choosing, so make sure to go do that. But since we don't have a review this week, we're going to be doing Adam's Australian Word of the Week.
Yeah. So my Australian Word of the Week this week is cozzies.
With a K?
With a C.
I'm going to say that means like you're feeling really cozy. Like, I'm just real cozies right now. I'm snuggled up in a blanket.
Don't answer yet.
Koozie?
No, it's not a beer koozie. No. So it's COZZIES.
All right. So I'm going to say it's, I don't know why, but it's like another word for flip-flops. Because apparently that's something you guys have lots of words for.
I mean, it's not, but you're the closest so far.
All right.
Okay.
What is it?
So it is swimmers.
Oh.
Like swim trunks?
Yes.
A bathing
suit? Like the whole thing. Bathing suit, yeah. Yeah, what was it? Last time was togs, right?
Can you say again what the Australian word for flip-flops is? Because I always forget, and it always makes me happy whenever you say
thongs?
No, isn't there?
No, the other one. Cloggers?
Oh, pluggers.
Pluggers.
Pluggers, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to say thank you to Dave for coming by and chatting about Kickstarter. It was a lot of fun. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find, you know, Maker Pipe online? And
yeah, you guys are awesome. Thanks so much for having me. Makerpipe.com. And we've been doing a lot with our YouTube as well, Maker Pipe.
Yeah. And they have an Instagram. Do you also do Twitter?
No Twitter.
No Twitter. I'm with you. I like that. No. This, I'm with you on that. Well, thank you again for coming. And I want to thank TF Turning for the theme song. And until next time, cheers. And have a great day.
See you.
I did great because I know you're doubting me. I can see it in your eyes.
Adam's just here.
Is Adam frozen or is he just very still?
Very still.